Welcome to Cultural Fugazi, an optimistic take on the culture of the end times. I'm Chris.
And I'm Justice. We're doing things a little bit different this time, so I don't know how on earth this will sound. We are doing our absolute best, but we tried to make this a little different by doing it in person.
Yeah, we're in the same room.
Yeah, Chris is in front of me. Now, this isn't a surprise to most people who see us together, but it is a surprise for us to try to record this thing live to tape.
It's true. We're learning new things.
It will be very different for us as humans, and for you, you won't care, so who gives a shit?
I think right off the bat, I do want to say lots of stuff going on in the news right now. Definitely some heavy topics that certainly do touch on culture, but because they're so important and because they're so heady, I think both Justice and I want to make sure that we give them their due, and we are not prepared to do that right now.
Yeah, it's 9:30. I've been doing yard work all day, and I have two White Claws in front of me, so we're not going to have the best conversation about mass shootings or Roe v. Wade and what these things mean for us as individuals and as a society. So we're just going to kind of move on to other stuff, knowing that we would love to come back and have way better conversations, especially with like some material and homework.
Yes, absolutely. And I think for some of those conversations, we'd also maybe like to like have some friends to talk with us because...
Oh, God, imagine like if we added more people to this, Chris, this is... okay, but we can do it.
Yeah, I'm going to buy a bunch of microphones. It's going to be fine. It's going to be fine.
Great. Yeah. You can expense those. You can expense those. Yeah.
Perfect.
Okay, great. No, we've both been enjoying a lot of stuff for sure. I know there's concerts that we haven't really had a chance to talk about yet. Some stuff that we've seen together, as well as some other stuff in general. And then there is some movies that we both seen. You're halfway through one of them and not the whole thing, but that's on me for wanting to go ahead and now. And then, some albums and stuff, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, maybe let's kick it off with, those shows.
Yeah.
So, hey, what did we see?
Yeah, to bring this up, we didn't record an episode. We said we'd do this every 2 weeks and we didn't. Because we've both been really busy. So what that means is we have like a month of concerts that we have not talked about. And we figured now would be a good time to go ahead and talk through that stuff. So we've seen so far, I think, between the months of April and May, and it's just about June. I know I've seen Pup at least once. They're coming back soon. You and I went to go see Mom Jeans, Joyce Manor, and A Story So Far. Tried to go see another show, but that show was sold out. I don't remember what show that was, but that was fine. We did go.
Right.
But we did drink PBRs.
Yeah, yeah. Great venue and bowling alley. Mahal's here in Cleveland.
Yeah.
A wonderful place. They've got a concert venue now that I think is in a bedroom, basically.
Yeah.
Turns out those sell out quickly because you can't fit a lot of humans up there.
Who'd have thought like 20 people got to go see this thing? And like, that's cool for them, but you know, you get what you get. I think... else did we see? Man.
I went to Big Thief.
Yeah, you went to Big Thief. And I saw Girl Talk back in March.
Oh yeah. That's right. That happened.
Oh yeah, you were there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You got there late. That's
yes,
why.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I might have already been at the camp. But yeah. We saw Girl Talk and I saw Eve 6, which I didn't see Eve 6. I saw We Are the Union, and Eve 6 also was there and I left. Because I like ska shows and not 90s alternative shows. I know they sound like the same thing when you say it out loud like that, but they are different.
Oh, they're definitely different things.
So hit me with, I don't think I've talked to you since you saw Big Thief. I talked to you once.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So we didn't really get too in depth with how that whole thing was. It was fantastic. I mean, I'm a big fan of the band to begin with, and they have been mostly doing solo projects for a while. So this new album that they just released is something that happened after like a couple of years of them not really seeing each other. So listening to Adrian Lenker talk about it, she's mentioned that it was great for them all to get together in the same house for the first time and to like rediscover how much they love playing together, and also to sort of like bring the experience of those other projects into Big Thief. This album is a lot more tracks. It sounds like they recorded a bunch of stuff that didn't make it to the album. And they clearly had a lot of fun recording it, and they clearly had a lot of fun playing it. One of the things that was delightful to see is that, like, they were playing off of each other in a way that made it very clear that these are people who have played instruments together for a while. Yeah. And that fun and that sort of, like, camaraderie and spirit was infectious. Could not help but be like, oh, this is great. I love this. You're having fun, and now I'm having fun, and we're all just having a good time. So it was good.
Yeah, it's wild to think during a global pandemic, people didn't spend a lot of time together.
Yeah, weird, right?
No, that's great. So the one thing that I never really understood about Big Thief, because I don't really listen to it, is that they all record solo, right? Like, well, they get together and do stuff, but also it's like kind of like an all-star group or whatever. They all separate out and do their own stuff.
Yes. Yeah, they all have projects that they're working on alongside Big Thief, and then they get together for Big Thief, and sort of like those personalities get to mesh. And it does sound like, from, you know, conversations I've heard the band have, that they have a really, it seems like a very healthy process that they use to figure out songwriting. And, you know, it's very much a, we're going to do stuff that the band feels comfortable with. We're going to try to have fun. We're going to try to make sure that everybody gets to sort of like put their mark on the music. And it definitely shows. It was fantastic.
Yeah, that sounds like a good time. How long was that set, do you think?
I think it was around maybe 45 minutes to an hour. So not like a super long set, but okay. Yeah.
So with touring on a new album, did they kind of play that album all the way through? Did they just play a couple tracks?
They just played a couple tracks, in part because that album has a lot of stuff on it. Okay. And one of the things that I've heard them talk about is that they're looking for other ways to actually distribute some of the stuff that didn't even make it to the album. So my sense is there's a lot of music that they want to get out there. And because of that, and because they do have a lot of really, really good stuff off of other albums that I think they enjoy playing, they didn't necessarily hit the entire album. But they did hit some of the really good stuff off of the album. I thought they did a really nice job with the set list, too. It was a nice combination of new and old. They played some of the stuff that, you know, I know I wanted to hear, that I think other folks wanted to hear. So very much appreciated.
Yeah, I went and saw, speaking of bands like touring on new albums, we did see Mom Jeans, and I do want to talk about that album a little bit because, I like it. But I went and saw Kevin Devine, who put on a new album earlier this year. I did see them at Mahal's, and it was in the big room, so a lot of people got to go. I actually really enjoyed that because it was, he's a solo artist that tours with a band, and he said, we're just going to play this new album front to back. And I think I really like when that happens, when I really like the album in question. And also when I don't know a lot of other tracks from a band. So like this Kevin Devine, small indie emo artist, you know, is kind of doing that thing. I have listened to absolutely nothing. Spotify was like, may I present to you an album? And I said, sure, Spotify, you've only let me down a couple times. So let's try this out. But yeah, so like, it's always interesting to me whenever bands are touring on new albums, or like Pup, they're touring on that new album. I don't like it at all. So, you know, it's interesting to figure out, okay, what are they going to sound like? How's that performance going to go? Especially whenever you have multiple people who cut things from an album, then tour on the album. But I think you were saying in some of the interviews that they might be doing some of this stuff solo, or it might end up in other places.
Yeah, so it sounds like they're thinking about other ways that they can distribute things. So can they release a whole bunch of singles? Can they do some streaming stuff? You know, maybe they live stream some stuff. So it's very clear that they're trying to think outside of sort of the, you know, conventional, we release an album, and then if we release another album when we have enough content, because they've just got too much content to be able to make that make sense. And I think they're planning to make more content. So yeah. It's like, how do we get all this stuff out there when we like the stuff that we've made, but it didn't all make the cut for the album for various reasons? And I think part of that is, you know, an album can only be so long. Part of it is, you know, ultimately you want the album to have a cohesive feel. And, you know, some degree of, yes, these songs all make sense together. And it's funny, Adrian Linker specifically has said that's not a thing she's good at. So she sort of like relies on the rest of the band to take care of that. But that is certainly something that I think they thought through when putting this, these particular songs together. And that doesn't mean they don't love those other songs enough to want them to be out in the world. So I think they'll hopefully find some interesting ways to make that happen. And it sounds like they're trying to make that work.
Was that concert at one of the bigger venues? Was that
That was
downtown?
At the Agora.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, Justice, you mentioned, I want to get back to the pop concert in a second, but before we do that,
yeah.
I do want to hear a little bit more about, like, what was it about the Kevin Devine concert and that music that sort of, like, pulled you in? What did you like about it?
Oh, okay. Yeah, the weird thing for me, again, like, I've never listened to this artist at all. I believe they came out of another emo band that he used to tour with. He told some interesting stories when he was on stage, but sometimes it's 12:30 at night and you're playing Wordle on your phone, you know, right at 12. You can't think of words and you go, Spotify, I'd love to just listen to anything while I bash my head against how many different five-letter combinations are there that aren't the word crane or dealt, right? So I desperately go search Spotify for new music and it popped up. I enjoyed the album. It's very mellow. I don't always like mellow. Someone who likes a lot of ska music, that's probably, you know, very obvious. Mellow is not my default. But yeah, I do have a, you know, I was 12 once. I understand. You know? So it was a really fun live show. He was a compelling storyteller. And I think this album that he put out recently, I could not tell you the name of it to save my life, tells a really compelling story. That I was listening to that album around the same time we were reading Paranisses for book club. And I found a lot of specific parallels in my brain with how these two people are telling stories using a lot of allegory and this, that, and the other. And I found for some reason, those two things gelled really well together with how my brain has to work on stuff. So I really enjoyed that. And that show was great. I left right after work. So I had to be the most stuck up businessman at the cool emo show at the bowling alley, wearing my polo and my, I think I had on my pup polo because they made those. So I needed more pup shirts.
That just for you. That's yeah. So specifically.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So with that, I had to be the oldest looking man there. You know, I'm in my early 30s. Now, as soon as the show was over, I super had to use the restroom. So I run out and go use the restroom. I was like, oh, if he does an encore, I don't really know a lot of his stuff that's not on this album. And then apparently, as soon as he was done, he also really had to use the restroom. Because I'm standing there washing my hands. And he's in the urinal next to me, like, oh, good show, man. And I probably, like, looking at me did not look like a person who was at that show to be like, hey, good show, man. But yeah, that was fun. Weird crowd for them. You know, some asshole emo kids, some normal emo people, you know, very diverse crowd, but kind of weird.
All right, so now, speaking of pup polos, I'm very curious to hear, we've talked a little bit about this, so you mentioned that maybe not a huge fan of the current album.
Correct.
But what about the live show?
Yeah. Yeah. The pup live show kind of sounds like this.
Nailed it.
It's a lot of hanging out, slinging beers and screaming at the top of your fucking lungs, right? For a pup show. And even if you do not, if there is a pup song you do not like, it will still be your favorite live performance you have ever seen. I guarantee it. So we went down to Columbus to go see him because many shows, Chris, as you're well aware, don't come to Cleveland.
Yeah, that used to not be the case. We used to be like, oh, you've got to stop in Cleveland because, you know, rock and roll. But last maybe 10 or 15 years, it's very much, and my understanding is that, like, part of this has to do with, like, weird fees and weird licensing stuff, and there's a lot of nonsense that happens in the background with the venues and what they can and can't do that has made it maybe more difficult for some artists who maybe don't have as much money or don't have, like, lawyers and whatnot to be able to play some of these places. So unfortunate, but yeah, sometimes if you want to see someone, you have to go to not Cleveland.
Yeah, you have to be in not Cleveland. And as Clevelanders, we're used to not being in Cleveland, right?
That's true.
So yeah, we drove down to Columbus, stayed at a wonderful motel that I don't even know what the food was. Our door was already kicked down by the cops, like you could tell pre-kicked in, so because like all the deadbolts and stuff were gone. So that was nice. And it was next to the only 24/7 McDonald's, apparently, in the greater Columbus area.
See, there you go.
Yeah.
All so the amenities.
We could have made really bad decisions, but it turns out by being the only 24/7, it's impossible to get to. But yeah, that show was awesome. I went with some friends and played a lot of pinball beforehand. Saw the show. Saw, you know, what Pup is always and will always be one of my favorite live performances. And so you could say that was a perfect week.
So I'm curious, and it does, I would very much concur that, you know, Pup seems like the band, the kind of band that when they play stuff live, there's going to be energy, it's going to be fun, you're going to have a good time. But can you talk a little bit more about what made, if this is true, what made the live stuff from the new album work in concert versus what about it maybe didn't quite land on the album?
I'm happy you asked. So, you know, I have a lot of friends who also have listened to this album and we've been talking about it a lot. This one, they did a little different. So Pup usually sounds like the cement floor that it's being recorded in, right? Because it's garage punk. This one, they recorded it in a mansion. Apparently, it sounds like it was recorded in a mansion because the instrumentation on the actual record is something that I don't normally associate with the band, right? I'm looking for punk. I'm looking for fast, scream the chorus out, a bunch of nonsense and kind of move through stuff. They spent a bunch of money on this, or at least it sounds like they spent a bunch of money on this. The instrumentation on it is very different. There are a lot of devices and instruments. And what I mean by that is there are things in there that I typically would not hear in a normal Pup song. Some of their stuff that even has like on some of the other albums, like Morbid stuff, I would associate more of like even a folk influence on some of their songwriting, where this one really kind of just moves through. There's a couple good songs, there's a couple whatever songs, but nothing that really stands out as worthwhile. So whenever they play it live, you don't have that instrumentation problem because it's still just them doing what they are doing. So with just the four of them on a stage, you're going to hear what you're going to hear. So the instrumentation problem isn't an issue. So that was one of my favorite live shows.
Now, I don't believe that this happened at the live show, but correct me if I'm wrong, but have they not recently been playing with occasionally with somebody else that you're a big fan of?
Yeah, so they were live on Seth Meyers because they can't make it into that big late night show, but they did do Seth Meyers and they brought out Rosenstock. So apparently they flew him out. Jeff Rosenstock, also another indie artist doing a lot of DIY punk and ska stuff. Yeah, absolutely. So they did that on Seth Meyers and he came out and played saxophone. Again, not an instrument that I typically associate with Pump as a punk album. They kind of don't really do too much of that. But bringing out one of the new era ska people and then having them be on Seth Meyers was kind of, it was interesting. I don't know if it was good. I liked it. But again, when they get out of that kind of basement floor, garage floor cement sound, when it kind of, they add a lot more to it, still not what I'm looking for. But, Jeff's just as fun as Pup, you know, also one of my favorite live shows, one of my favorite bands. So with that, like, they're coming to Cleveland next Friday, Puppets.
Right.
So they're playing, I think, House of Blues?
That sounds right. Yes, yeah, yes, that is
that,
right.
That, that
yes.
sounds right. But I don't know if I'm going to go.
Oh, wow.
Not because I don't want to, but, like, I saw that show. I liked that show. I can jump in a pit and get my ass kicked for every Pup show. I'm totally fine with that. I just don't know if that's how I want to spend that Friday after seeing them. We've done that before. My friends and I have gone and like seen them in Columbus and then saw them again in Cleveland and whatever. But because of this album, I'm just like, well, I liked it. it was good. I just don't. We'll see. So whenever I text you on Friday and ask you, are you coming to the pup show or not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to say, like, just hearing that possibility even escape.
We know it's not true.
Yeah. It's like, gasp, what?
We know I'll be there. Yeah, it's definitely different. And then you and I saw Mom Jeans and Joyce Manor in A Story So Far.
Yeah, so I definitely, you know, going from an album that, a new album that maybe didn't quite land for you, Mom Jeans, different story. Tell me about your experience with that new album.
Yeah, I didn't listen to, again, I don't listen to a lot of Mom Jeans, and not because I didn't like it, but I tried out their first album around when it came out. You know, it gets retweeted by some people that also I follow on Twitter and whatever. I checked it out and I went, this is okay. New album came out. Again, I'm just looking for some of that emo influence. It's the right time for me to be really into that stuff. So I really enjoyed this new Mom Jeans album. It is a breakup album. Mm. It works so well. It's front to back. I started on the right track. Like, I got a single of it. And I think it's, I don't have anything in front of me, so I could not tell you which fucking track it is, but it was one of the heavier ones. I listened to that and I went, this is good. And I kind of started it from the top and really liked it. So then I have never heard Joyce Manor, mm-hmm. and I have never heard A Story So Far, or The Story So Far.
The Story So Far.
Like, And You Will Know Us by the Trail of the Dead, except they start with Gypsies. So yeah, I'd never heard those two bands. I don't know if you had or not.
It's not really. I hadn't really heard Joyce Manor, but I had heard some of The Story So Far previously, and okay. Not something that I necessarily like will throw on as a yes, this will give me my emo indie fix. But I am familiar with them, and I mean they kind of do exactly what you expect. You know, you get what's on the label. Like, would you like? Like some sad music that's upbeat, though?
I would.
Good news. Good news.
Yeah. I made you, or at least I sent over that Mom Jeans album.
Yes.
What did you think? Because I, like I said, I'd kind of never really listened to them, but I did like it. What did you think?
I enjoyed it, and I have not spent as much time with it as I think I would like to spend with it, which I think says something to the album, but I was struck with, and it was unsurprising to me that you had a good time with it, because there is a lot of energy on that album.
Yeah.
And I think like that very clearly also came through in the show, in a way that, like, it's been a while since I've sat down with some of, I was in college, which it's not important how long ago that was. We don't need to, we don't need to
discuss
that.
Time is a flat circle, so it really doesn't fucking matter when you think about it.
Who cares? Plus pandemic.
Yeah, we lost 2 years, so
Who could say? Mm-hmm. So very much like landed in the kind of thing that when I was in, I literally played stuff like that on a radio show that I had. And so sitting with that album
in the 60s, right?
Oh, just as that hurts. You've wounded me. So that's just, you're just saying I'm timeless is what I'm going to take from that.
Absolutely.
That's what I'm going to take from that. But it definitely brought me back to the things that I remember loving when I had that radio show, and something that I forgot that I enjoyed until I heard it again. It's like, oh, that's right. This is actually really nice. So it was great to listen to that album, and specifically it was great to see that show. Yeah. And like, I think Mom Jeans was probably the most fun.
I think, yeah. They were definitely the most fun. Joyce Manor was an experience. I don't know if I would call it good. They were definitely there.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting to have had Joyce Manor bookended with Mom Jeans and The Story So Far, because Mom Jeans was just fun. And like, they were tight. They seemed like they were having a good time. And then Joyce Manor, I felt like all of that emo stuff that I talked about really loving and really liking, it's like they get you like 80% of the way there. And then like, and now we're done. You're like, no, but we're not. But
the endorphin hit of the sad boy.
Yes.
You know, like, that's what I like about emo. I, I just made you listen to a bunch of Rufio earlier.
it's true. It's delightful.
Yeah, because that's just where I'm at right now. But yeah, that endorphin hit of that whiny, nasally nonsense, Joyce Manor just did not deliver that specific hit. Like, either scream into a microphone or be the whiniest, saddest boy you've ever heard. They somehow had a person on stage filling everything out with an acoustic guitar that also just didn't sound good.
There were a couple of tracks where you're like, okay, it makes sense here.
Yeah.
But that guitar kept playing for the entire set.
The whole time?
Yeah.
And I couldn't even, eventually you're like, oh, I can't even hear it. Like, it's there. It's supposed to be there to fill out sound when you have like just an acoustic guitar like that, just doing that stuff. Ask Dave Matthews. You know, but yeah, that was very strange. I was not crazy about Joyce Manor. I do not plan on seeing Joyce Manor again. The story so far was good enough that I might check it out.
Yeah, I think they're like a really, really good, oh, this is a live band that I wouldn't mind seeing. I don't know that you necessarily need to listen to them if you already have other emo bands that you're a fan of, because I think you're going to get essentially more of the same from that. But seeing them live was nice. And I think part of what you get from them that we didn't see from Joyce Manor, and same thing with Mom Jeans, I think in both of those cases, you have dynamics. You have the songs change, they evolve, they hit highs and lows, and so they get to build some tension.
Right.
And then you do get the emo boy scream that lets you release that tension.
Yeah.
Versus Joyce Manor, where it all kind of was just the same. Sometimes the tempo was fast, sometimes the tempo was slow, but it was always essentially the same.
Yep. Yeah, it sounded like someone strumming on an acoustic guitar that you couldn't really hear.
Yes.
That's what it sounded like.
Yes.
Yeah, that, so Mom Jeans is coming back into town in September. They are headlining that show as like, hey, they're finally touring on that album.
Excellent.
I think around the same time, it's Mom Jeans is coming in. Tenacious D is coming to town like the same, around the same time. And then there's another show. It's like Friday and Tuesday and another. September looks like it's going to be where some of these shows that you and I were seeing are either going to come back, or people are putting out new stuff and booking whatever show that they were going to try to play in 2020. So, like, we'll see. Because we have tickets for a couple things that still haven't pan out, right? Are you going to Rage Against the Machine?
That's right. Yes. Yeah. Yes. 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 That's the big one.
That's the big one. That's the one that was really expensive. I'm really excited to see that show. I like Rage Against the Machine a whole bunch, and I like Run the Jewels a lot.
Yeah. Agreed.
The last time I saw Run the Jewels, I was really drunk and don't really remember.
They were very good.
I'm guessing they were good. I can't imagine it being a bad time. What I remember was good.
Yeah.
And then someone helped me walk out of it.
So. Yeah, I mean, they are unsurprisingly excellent performers, and I mean,
yeah.
Those songs are fantastic.
You're not going to have a bad
time. No.
Unless some drunk asshole falls down on you. Who could say?
Yeah. It happens to the best of us.
Or the worst of us.
I mean, sometimes those are the same thing.
One of them's me. Well, we've been talking a lot about live shows. Any other shows to bring up, or anything you've seen without me around?
Yeah, I think that Big Thief show was the only other show. And at this point, I'm still at the stage where I've forgotten that live music is an option.
And I have not.
Yeah, I know. You've been out there.
Working my ass
you've been
off
out there. Yet hitting the streets.
Yeah, because I ended up seeing I went to Akron to go see Mephiscopheles. Like I said, I went to go see We Are the Union at that Eve 6 show. Yeah, I've just been, that has been my primary thing, is playing in my pinball league, going to see live shows, and our book club. Like, and that keeps me busy. It's nice. It's nice to have hobbies again.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of stuff. Yeah, I am hoping to get back on the show bandwagon, as it were, because there were a few things that came through when I wasn't paying attention that I'm sad that I missed. Of course, not to Cleveland, but although I take that back, Japanese Breakfast was here in Cleveland.
Yes, they were.
And I really, really wish I would have made that show.
I saw that pop up on like Facebook or something.
Yeah. So I'm hoping they come back around. Mitski did not come into Cleveland, but was touring, so was in Pittsburgh,
yeah,
and then Detroit.
Yeah. The gambit.
Yeah.
And then they go to Chicago.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Exactly.
Depending
exactly
on which way. Either Chicago, Detroit, Pittsburgh,
yes.
Chicago.
Yes.
And that way they go totally around
Cleveland. Yeah, exactly. It's weird.
Yeah, like most people with Cleveland, they just avoid it.
You know, it's sad. Our city is, it's got stuff.
It's a city.
Yeah.
My buddy always tweets, Cleveland is a city also. And I appreciate that mentality of the city of Cleveland.
Well, I will say, so part of the reason that it took us a little longer to record this particular podcast than normal, I was traveling for work. And I forget sometimes that Cleveland actually has some stuff that other cities that you would expect to have that stuff either don't have or have to the same degree that Cleveland does in a way that is surprising to me. So, for example, going out to California, and you would assume California, they're going to have, you know, lots of like vegan food, lots of like really just good cuisine. Like it's a very international area near San Francisco.
You're going to have good Chinese food, good Japanese food.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Being right there on the coast.
Yes. Now, they do have lots of good food out there and plenty of options, but you would be surprised at how many options we have here in Cleveland, particularly if you look at it like on a per capita and like size of city. Like,
yeah.
Oh, Cleveland's actually really pretty good here. Like, I have more vegan options close to me than I tend to San Francisco.
That's odd. That's really strange.
Now, part of this is we've got just a lot of places that have opened up in the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
But even before that, not terrible. So Cleveland is surprisingly not terrible in the ways that it is not terrible.
You know, speaking of vegan food, so you text me that you were going to ride your bike down. Well, I said, do you want to get drunk and maybe record this podcast? And you said, yes, I will ride my bike down. And then I made you carry 20 pounds of audio equipment on your bicycle and climb up a hill to come see me. But whenever you said, yes, I'm going to show up, that required us to put in a $20 Instacart order. The minute it's like, oh shit, Chris is showing up. Do we have anything that Chris can eat? Ah, fuck. Okay. Which I don't mind eating. Like, you know me, I do not mind eating vegan food, because I will literally eat anything. But, you know, we do vegan pizzas together. You know, the vegan cheese is still not cheese.
Yeah.
But it's better. We talked about that last time. It's still fake cheese, but it's close. So we did some grilling today and some fake, not the fake burger. These were like an actual veggie burger thing. Fake cheese.
Pretty tasty.
Yeah.
And I needed those calories.
Yeah, you needed, yeah, that I handed you, you know, as is required, I handed you a White Claw immediately.
Yes.
Then a Gatorade.
Yes.
Then put you in the shower.
Yes.
Then fed.
That appropriate order
for
all of those things.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, we've seen some movies. You and I haven't been going together, but you're halfway through The Northman, so we won't talk about The Northman today, because I actually want to talk about, like,
yeah,
the essay of masculinity that movie is.
I think that might serve as a good springboard into some of the bigger topics that we want to talk about. And so, yes, I agree. Yeah. We should save that for when I've watched the whole thing.
Right. And then really nothing crazy from a TV perspective. I don't think I've been watching too much. I'm catching back up on Barry.
Oh, I need to get back to that, but I've been watching a different HBO series that I have one episode left of. So,
which one is that?
Our Flag Means Death.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I do need to get back to that one too. Would you recommend it? So knowing what you know now of that show, is it an easy recommend, or is it a like a
it is an easy recommend, in part because it is, I mean, Taika Waititi, all of his stuff is pretty, like, it goes down easy, even if there is content in there that is interesting and you can chew on and gnaw on for a while. Mm-hmm. And the same is very much true of this show. There's a lot of really delightful, humorous bits. There is absolutely some commentary happening in the background, but there is enough fun and joy that you're not going to get bogged down at any point. Look, is queer pirates are a lot of fun. That's what I'm going to say.
I did not know that that was the direction the show was going to go. And what I meant by what I mean by that is, like, I was surprised by the content, specifically the topics that they touch on in that show. Again, another show about where I left off was very much about masculinity and about, you know, what it means to have a family and walking away from that. And yeah, there's probably, again, I think our the new thing in culture, at least the thing that I think culture is doing a really interesting job of coming back to now, is I'm seeing a lot of male creators come back and review and analyze masculinity, right? This is not a new thing to do, but I think our specific era of what it means to be male and identify as male is definitely adapting and changing, and we're seeing that happen in art, right? It's not just you know, everyone's a super bro, super dad, you know, like, hey, there's vulnerable human beings that are also men or identify as men, and I think we're actually seeing more of that explored in media. At least it's easier to find that stuff. Maybe it's always been around, but it definitely seems like we're seeing more of it now, and it's happening in, again, The Northman was a large budget film that's, you know, $83 million, right? Same thing with Our Flag Means Death. That's huge. That's a HBO prestige television show. You know, I saw ads for it everywhere over HBO, and it's also another thing about interesting topics. It seems like in the era of the internet, you can kind of find what you're looking for.
Right.
And there's getting some bigger eyes on them, or at least some of that advertising push that you typically wouldn't see behind some of the stuff. But if it was only on FX at 11 o'clock.
Well, and I think we certainly have, I think a lot of the commentary that happened about sort of masculinity and what it is to be a male that might have lent itself to, you know, viewing that more critically was more satirical, or was more, like your Fight Club is the prime example, where it's, I think the creators put that out there as a critique of masculinity and something to engage with. What do we actually, like, think about masculinity? How does it play out? What's good and what's toxic? A lot of people saw that and went, that's cool. I'm gonna do that. Yeah. And so I think
you are toxic.
Right. And seeing sort of the fallout from that, a lot of creators went, oh, we can't layer that behind satire. Like, if anything, rather than just relying on a critique that is that satirical take that's pointing out some of the more, you know, maybe toxic or absurd aspects of, you know, negative portrayals of masculinity, I think we now are in a direction where it's, what if we showed positive portrayals, or at least, like, added in some of the emotional impact of what it is to be a man that isn't always being captured? Yep. And so now things are taking a slightly different view that I think is important and good. And I think, once I watch The Northman, we should talk a bunch more about that.
We should talk. Yeah, absolutely.
How's Barry been?
It's good. I'm happy to see that show come back. NoHo Hank, still one of the best characters on TV. Period, like, bar none. I can't think of a character that I enjoy watching more than NoHo Hank.
It's so delightful.
He fucking kills it every time. And they're definitely doing something a little bit different with this season. It's really tough because I compared season one of Barry to Dexter, like season one of Dexter, where I think there's something of that dark humor involved with, and Barry, it's being a hitman from Cleveland and also wanting to be an actor. That's funny, right? Like, obviously that's funny. They are playing down, and the first couple episodes of Barry, they're playing down that comedy stuff a little bit. It is now about domestic issues and domestic abuse and these topics. Hey, it turns out that being a hitman probably.
What?
And yeah. And then also having a crazy acting life with that. You know, pairing that along, those two things don't taste good together. So,
so what I'm hearing is that I should finish Our Flag Means Death and watch Barry, and you should finish Barry and watch Our Flag Means Death.
I think you're right.
Then I should finish The Northman, and then we'll have tons and tons to talk about when it comes to masculinity.
Yeah, fuck yeah. I think that would be good. Absolutely. Now, I don't really have anything else. Well, I mean, there's books. We could talk about books for a little bit, but I do have a couple albums that I've listened to. You know, we talked about that a little bit with some of the live stuff, but there's a couple albums that came out recently. I think we could talk well, especially because they are, a couple of them are politically charged in a way that I think is worthwhile and relevant. But before we do that, I'm going to go grab a beer.
Oh.
So either we edit this out or you talk for a minute while I go get a beer, because I think we're recording live the tape. So good luck, Chris.
Fantastic. Well, beer is important. Justice Away, what to talk about? So I can talk a little bit about that travel again. So recently had to travel for work. An interesting experience because I have never had to travel so far for such a short period of time. So out to Northern California on Tuesday morning, was there for specific work stuff on Wednesday, left California Wednesday evening,
yeah,
got back to Cleveland, 10:30 a.m. on Thursday. Then after that...
I killed my mic for that burp, so hopefully that did not pick up on hopefully that did not pick up on your microphone. But also, you're doing the editing, so this could totally be going.
That's
you could just be talking to yourself for a minute.
That's true. Yeah, I don't know how compelling the I flew for a while.
Yeah, you were on a plane.
On a plane for a while.
You did get some reading done. On the plane.
I did. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Our recent book club book, which. It was an interesting experience to read it the way that I read it, in part because, as we talked about during our discussion, it has a bit of a dreamlike, dare I say, even fever dreamlike quality to it.
Name the book, Chris.
The book is Stranger in Olandria. Yeah.
It was
a fantastic read, and the prose is lyrical, and it is like just decadent and delicious and is just full.
It is a chocolate cake with chocolate icing.
Yes.
It is the most dense prose book I think we've gotten through as a book club in a while. We did talk about it until I made us cut everything short so I could get drunk. But up until that point, yes, we totally were all about the word choice and how that impacted this specific story. Again, another book that we could actually probably really talk about masculinity with.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, another one that we could probably just, all those topics are touched on. One of the most, I'm going to use the word romantic.
Yes.
Absolutely romantic books.
Yes.
That we've read. And I mean the sense of romance, not just like, oh, the idea that two people can like each other, but like romantic.
Yeah. Well, and very much in the vein of the, like the romantic romantics of love and death are inextricably tied together. Right. And in order to experience the extreme joy of love, you must also be ready to experience the extreme despair that is losing that love. It's boy, oh boy, there's a lot of loss in that book.
Yeah. We did come around on, well, we did decide book good as a book club. We didn't talk about this last time. Our book club works. It's Chris and I and one more person, Brandon. Hi, Brandon. He'll never listen to this. Maybe he will. We, you know, get together. We read a book over 2 weeks. If it's a longer book, we read it over a month, and then we kind of get together and decide if the book is good or not. And that has a lot of, we picked a binary choice on that because we thought that was the more interesting and compelling argument on is it good or not. Because there's things that we talk about, like whether or not a book is successful and does it accomplish what it's trying to do, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But yes, we came on book good for that one, and good pick.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very interesting to read that sort of. So my kickoff of the book was on my plane ride to San Francisco.
Yeah.
And I am not much of a morning person. I don't like to be awake when the sun is out.
I've slept on your couch and I've seen you crawl out of your den in the morning.
Yeah.
With Toby in tow.
Yes.
And yeah, no, you didn't strike me as a morning person.
No, it's not my favorite time. The plane that I had to catch left at 6:45 a.m.
Oh, good. A perfect due time.
Yeah. So that meant that I needed to be awake many hours before that. That is not when I personally am my best. Just
No.
Doing what I can to survive at that point.
You literally got a job working on for a company in the West Coast so you could sleep in more.
That was a big part of it. I'm not going to lie. So yeah, that evening, because of course, yeah, there's no way to tell your brain, hey brain, this is going to be a weird one. I'd like to still get 8 hours of sleep, but I'm going to need you to shut it down.
That ain't how brains do.
No. So of course I didn't get a ton of sleep prior to the flight. So getting on the flight, and once I'm awake, very difficult for me to not be awake. I've just recently gotten to the point where I can nap. It was not a thing that I used to be able to do. It's a skill that you really do have to train in. I'm very sad that I haven't had the opportunity to do much training.
Chris, it's called getting old, and the older you get, the easier it is to nap.
Great. Well, that's good news.
Just, you know, future improvement to look forward to.
Yeah.
Right.
Perfect. Yeah. Perfect. So getting on that plane, being slightly sleep deprived, and then cracking open this very dreamy book was just a fascinating experience. And then reading sort of a lot of the rest of it on the plane ride back. So it was a red eye. So again, sleep and being awake, very strange.
And that was, you flew out Tuesday morning and you flew back Thursday morning?
Wednesday night.
That's right.
Yes. Yeah. Very much the red eye, very much the, like, there was a point where I've got the light on, like, well, I need to stop reading now because I don't want to be that jerk who is keeping my seatmates awake while I read this book from a book club.
But.
Well, look, I left it on for a little bit.
For a little.
Yeah. So that was a fascinating experience. And I think in some weird ways, it was a really fun way to read the book. Sort of enhanced, I think, some of the dreaminess and sort of put me in that headspace, because one of the things, I don't know if you know this, Justice, but one of the things that happens when you're sleep deprived is your creativity, it tends to, just briefly, goes up because your brain is too tired to get in the way of those connections.
See why I'm a creative asshole, because I don't sleep.
See, there you go. Now, the issue is that if you do that too long, eventually your brain gets tired and goes, no, I can't.
That's why I'm an asshole.
But that did make it very easy to paint the pictures that this book was painting with the wonderfully illustrative words that it used to paint those pictures. So it was a good time in some ways. It was also a terrible time in other ways.
It was the best of times. And it was the worst of times.
Yeah, but none of that was the book's fault.
Yeah.
That was all external nonsense.
Yeah. I did get through a couple books while you were gone. I don't know how many of these we've talked about. A high level overview really quick on my Goodreads. So I gave Stranger of Alondria a 5-star review. I liked it a lot. Joe Abercrombie, Before They Are Hanged, book 2 of The First Law, I gave that a 4-star. I really like that series. It is that post-Vietnam style fantasy, but with the 2000s comedy mentality applied to it.
Interesting.
So like that kind of dark, again, comparing things to Dexter, like that 06, 05 kind of dark mentality of that stuff in that, you know, black company style fantasy where it's very
the first
edgy.
Thing I thought of.
Yeah, I know. When I say post-Vietnam, one book. Got through Ancillary Justice by Anne Leckie. I gave that a 4-star. I like that. That was a recommendation from my brother. I'm going to start the second book of that soon. I want to give it a little bit of space. I did. It's a fun series, weird series about AI. I haven't been doing a lot of science fiction lately, and that was the right way to kind of ease me back into that. And then The House of Sky and Breath by Sarah J. Maas.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So if you've never read Sarah J. Maas before, so picture a fantasy book and then make it horny. Just make it horny.
You know, hornier than what you're thinking.
Yeah,
right now.
Yeah.
Notch it up again.
Take your idea of what is horny, and then let's make it pornographic, and then now we're talking. So she is doing a book series called Crescent City. It is her like second large series, or maybe third large series. I've read some of her other one, And I didn't like the first book of that as much as I have been liking the Crescent City stuff. This book two of Crescent City came out not too long ago. Again, if you want to know what I mean by garbage fantasy with the pornography turned on, this is an angel is hanging out with a fairy in a city full of werewolves and demons are there. Like, it is absolute garbage nonsense.
This is the one with the fairy cocaine, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's fairy cocaine. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I gave that a 3-star. The first book of that I actually really liked, and this one was less. She didn't execute, which I don't. We talk about execution in a book. We're talking about, is someone successful? How well do they deliver their message? Her message is very simple, which is, have you seen these people? They're all hot. And they're all going to bang.
I mean, that sounds like a great message.
You would think, right? Like, it's like separating good and bad seasons of True Blood, the television show from HBO, where it's like, everyone's hot, but you can still write a bad story around that. We're talking about the Northmen, and we're talking about Skarsgård.
Yeah.
But there's, I wasn't crazy about that, but that's kind of what I've made it through recently. I do have some things queued up that I'm excited to get to. I'm going to start a new series for me. That is Robert Jackson Bennett. He does the Founders trilogy with like Foundry Side. I believe that's young adult fantasy.
Aha.
To start that off, I'm gonna get to book two of the one book that we did read for book club, which is C.S. Friedman. I'm gonna do book two of that. We're gonna get to what is it? Vampire Jesus?
Yeah, Vampire yeah. Jesus. Yes.
Yeah, Dracula Jesus.
Yeah.
So we're going to, I'm going to get back to that. And I think that's it.
Yeah, that book was fun. I feel like I came across harder on it during our book club than we talked more about the stuff that didn't work than we talked about the stuff that made it fun.
Yeah.
Which, you know, sometimes it's, that happens.
It's a 90s fantasy book. So yes. There's going to be a lot to critique.
Yes.
Yeah. It's wide open for everyone to criticize it because it's kind of bad.
Yes,
I
exactly.
really liked it.
Yes.
It's exactly my bullshit in that these two angsty men, one is a priest and one is Dracula Jesus. And what if they were both angsty together?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, as you've seen with all the emo nonsense, it is a perfect thing for me right now. Anything else? I mean, obviously you've gotten through probably... more books, less books because of travel?
So because of the travel and because of the work, I have been doing less reading than I generally like to. I have gotten through some nonfiction stuff. A lot of that has been, I'm super interested right now in why people do stuff, particularly, and we'll probably talk a lot more about this when we talk about, again, masculinity. And we're really hyping this episode. Gonna be.
I think what's really fantastic is that it's never gonna happen. We're gonna let everyone down, Chris, just like we always do. You and I talking about masculinity? What do we know?
Oh boy. That's good times. A lot of the stuff that I've been reading recently has been getting into ideas around how does motivation work? Like, how do our emotional systems work versus our intellectual systems? Thinking specifically of Daniel Kahneman's Thinking Fast and Slow, which is a fantastic book. I think anybody who has even a little bit of capacity for reading nonfiction should pick that book up.
Okay.
Because I think it really does a lot to give you a sense of why brains work. So you've probably heard some folks mention cognitive biases before.
I think that's a bias.
You're right. You are correct.
Ugh.
Look at that.
Look at us.
Nailed it again. So.
See, this is the stuff that we can't do over the internet.
You're right.
We fuck these up. It's just like, no, it's an easy bounce pass. Like, you don't even have to worry about it. It's like, nope, totally bobbled.
Yeah, so. That Kahneman is one of the researchers who is responsible for helping to shed light on cognitive biases and what they are and sort of giving you the taxonomy of what those things are. And Thinking Fast and Slow gets into a bit of that, although a bunch of research that he's done since then has gotten into more of that. But the big takeaway from the book, I still think you should read it, even though I'm gonna give it away.
Ruin that author's $17.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He's an academic. He's not in it for the money. He's in it for the love of the brain.
Yeah, sure.
So the big takeaway is you've got two brains going on. You've got emotion brain, gut
brain. This is not a thing about masculinity.
No. I know, but it actually look.
Okay.
Look.
All right. Anyway,
Some parallels. This is good context for that.
Got it.
So two brains. Yep. You've got essentially. I keep calling it dumb animal brain, which I think is unfair because it is actually useful for some stuff. So it's sort of animal brain, like instinctive gut reaction. Oh no, I'm afraid. That brain. That is going
so
to
me most of the time.
Yes. Hey, if you have anxiety, that is specifically that first brain being like, hey, everything's going to kill us, right?
Right.
And you just feel that. Like, there's no rational component to that. It's just, oh no, clearly there's a bear, right?
Yeah.
Like, no, you're in the suburbs, in a house, you're on the second floor. Where's there going to be a bear? Come on.
But your brain's like, no, fucking window, dude.
Yeah, it's like, no, it's, trust me. I heard some scratching. It's definitely a bear. So that's brain one. Brain two is thinky brain. Brain two is your nerd brain. Brain two is your brain that's like, hey, what if we step back and actually like think about this rationally? Like, what if we took a moment to see if that's true? Brain one doesn't always love to listen to brain two, and you really do need to give brain two some help sometimes in order for that to be able to override brain one. And sometimes you don't want it to. Like, hey, if you are actually being attacked by a bear, you don't want brain two to be like, well, what's the likelihood that this bear will actually catch us? And do you want to stop for a second so that we can do the math on the velocity?
Right.
No, you should just run and maybe make yourself big. I don't know. I don't know how to deal with bears.
It's the right metaphor for us having no idea what the fuck a bear attack is. No, the thing it reminds me of is I've been seeing a lot of trailers for Top Gun lately.
Yes.
Right, and he goes, if you think of the sky, you're dead. Right? Like,
yeah. Well, and one of the things that the book does cover is a lot of times experts, what happens is they start with brain two, just, mm-hmm. You have to learn, like driving. Driving starts with brain two, which is part of the reason that young people get into accidents, because brain two takes longer to do stuff. So once you've trained, though, you can offload some of that stuff to brain one, and that then becomes your gut reaction, your instinctual reaction. So experts often, they've done a thing so long that the stuff that initially they had to think a lot about, it's just instinct. You may have had this when you have been sort of debugging code or working on an IT problem, where like
you're implying I do things at work.
You know,
this is another bias.
You're right. Nailed it again.
Yeah.
But if you ever have been in that situation where you don't know exactly what the solution is, but there's something that tells you I should look in this direction. Like, I feel like we should, hey, have you investigated this part of the problem? And it ends up that part of the problem is exactly the thing.
Yeah.
And somebody who hasn't been doing it long is like, how did you know? And you're like, I just had a feeling. And that feeling is like years and years of experience going, oh, I've seen things like this.
Yeah, it's usually a network problem.
Yes. Yeah, oh, absolutely.
It's usually, no, this is fucked because of anything that's not my fault.
Exactly. Look, networks, my God, nobody look up how the internet actually works, because
God,
if you
do,
you will have nightmares forever. Yeah, it's held together with toothpicks.
Let's talk about DNS for like 4 hours, about what it means to have like a centralized distributed system. Then we can talk about blockchain. Because we don't want to be sad. I don't know, you want to wrap it up, unless you want to talk about music? So we would talk about music.
That's true. I haven't listen to much new stuff, so
new Bruce Lee band came out again. You want to talk about Jeff Rosenstock? He's on that album. So is Jer from Sky 2 Network. They do some of the horns on that.
Yeah, nice.
And it's mostly Jeff Rosenstock's band, fronted by Mike Hart, who is the founder of Asian Man Records.
Yeah,
you would know Asian Man from the 90s and 2000s emo and punk scene, right?
That sounds right.
So he's still doing that. He does a little bit less of it now. Still runs out of his, I believe it still runs out of his mom's. So he has his solo project, which is Bruce Lee Band. They've been putting it out for years. And it's just him. So he has Dan, his last name, from MU330, which is a band. Again, that guy also plays on all of Jeff Rosenstock's stuff lately. Jeff Rosenstock is on it, as is Jeff's guitar player, Mike, who also has a solo album out. Same drummer, which is that dude's great. So it sounds really good. And they just put out like a really politically charged album for 2020. And it is I'm actually now going to use my phone and not sound like a fucking moron for a second. Tell you a little bit more information about this, but
now they're going to know that we don't come into this super prepared.
Oh, you and I?
I know.
The album is One Step Forward, Two Steps Back. It is a couple songs on here that are really great. I like the title track, or I like the starting track, Beats Me Up. The Right Time, which is one of the ones written by Dan, the guy from MU330. This is the first album he's ever done. He did a good article for Brooklyn Vegan. They did a track-by-track breakdown with Mike Park, where he talks about this is the first time he's recording himself singing someone else's songs. So Jeff Rosenstock wrote one. Dan wrote two. He wrote Right Time and... oh, which one is it? I thought he wrote Right Time and... I knew this. Anyway, Jeff Rosenstock wrote I Hate This, that track. I believe he wrote The Right Time and I'll Feel Better. Mike Park wrote everything else. It's all great. The horn player from Fishbone is on one or two tracks. And like I said, Jer from Sky 2 Network. That album, The Right Time, is a great song about when is the right time to make a political stance on a topic. It is a song about staying in your lane. When is it the right time to do that? And that song is really great. It was written after the LeBron James controversy of I'm going to use my platform to talk about a thing. And someone was like, just go play basketball. And the racist connotations of telling a black man in sports to just do his own thing and not talk about any of his struggles.
Yeah.
So
great.
Yeah. Mike has done a really great job of writing very. He's a Korean Korean American immigrant. I believe he was. I know he's a Korean American. And he does a song on this album in Korean. He did another one on his the previous EP that came out last year in Korean as well. And he's toured in Korea. But the thing that he really, really approaches in the entire album is just about how frustrating everything is right now. And it's nice to have that catharsis of, hey, it's really hard. Chris, you and I are avoiding talking about multiple topics like gun control and abortion rights and a lot of things because we're just not prepared. So how do you write an album in the year of our Lord 2022 and not be upset and mad knowing that the left has the majority of the political power and still nothing has happened? Nothing at all.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's a conversation that we should probably have around that too.
I mean, we're just not going to have, I mean, we'll have it every day because it's a, it's a frustrating garbage mess, but,
yes.
When is this entire album is frustrated and mad. And I think punk does that so well,
yes.
Especially like political punk and political punk mixed with a ska influence, not just because I like ska, but I think this is probably one of the better punk albums of the year, honestly. That we'll probably see compared to looking at the releases this year. You got Pup, you got Mom Jeans, you got this Bruce Lee Band album. Jer's album also came out this weekend. I don't really like Jer, but that's not Jer's fault. Probably my fault. I do like the Sky 2 Network covers, but it's because I like video game music. But looking at what the release calendar has been this year so far, that might be the best album that we get all. I think. I really do. I've been enjoying it immensely. I have done all of my yard work today to it until I put on like Melancholy and a bunch of that album is definitely a standout. And I don't think it will tour.
Huh.
Like,
oh, that's unfortunate.
He doesn't really tour. He has to ship all these other albums out of his mom's.
So. Right. Well, and I did want to just very quickly mention, since you brought up the Korean immigrant aspect there, we're coming up on the close of AAPI month, Asian American and Pacific Islander month.
You're totally right.
So hey, that album is a great way to take in some of that. Also, we will eventually talk about this movie, but Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Oh yeah, we both did see that.
Yeah, yeah.
Shit.
Yeah.
We're running really long, so we're not going to talk about it today.
No,
we should totally fucking talk about that.
Absolutely. Look, I think I'm going to try to do a multiverse.
I don't want to talk about this in the context of a multiverse because I think it actually does a disservice to kind of.
Well, so here's.
You did just watch Spider-Man though too.
I did, but I think Everything Everywhere All at Once will merit multiple conversations. I think it is something that there is enough there to talk about.
Okay.
Particularly. Based on some of the things that we've already suggested we'd like to talk about, and based on what our podcast is, I think there's a conversation, there is a conversation in that movie about nihilism versus optimism that right at the core.
That's actually, you're right. You're totally right.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll save that for next week or, well, 2 weeks from now.
Yeah.
God forbid we do another one of these next week. I think that's it.
Yeah.
Everything?
Yeah. I will say if you are looking for commentary immediately on Everything Everywhere All at Once, great podcast called They Call Us Bruce. They have an episode on it that's very good. It is an AAPI podcast, so they will give a lot of the context around the movie that plays directly into, you know, what that means for, you know, Asian Americans and Asians in general. It's going to talk about the immigrant experience in a way that is, you know, very like true to what that is. So I would highly recommend checking that out if you do want content around that before we manage to get to it.
Yeah.
And frankly, we're not going to talk about that piece of it nearly as well as they will. So go listen to them.
Yeah, as a white dude and a black man, I don't think you and I could really talk about the Asian American
experience.
I just don't think we have it in us. The first day of June is the start of LGBTQ plus month.
That's right.
So if that's you, hopefully you're excited and ready to do a bunch of pride stuff. So, you know, for recognizing the various months that we get, everyone gets, I hope that eventually everyone will actually have a month where they can feel special and cool. Unlike what I did for my birthday month, which was Taurus season. So I rampaged like a bull in a china shop. No, that should be really cool. I don't remember if Cleveland has a bunch of stuff for.
There is generally a Pride Parade.
Yeah, Pride Parade.
We have a fantastic LGBTQ resource center that is right off of Lorraine Avenue. It's sort of near Lakewood, which I don't know if this is still true. I need to look it up. For the longest time, it was the second largest population of LGBTQ folks outside of San Francisco.
Ooh.
Yeah. So that was true for a while. I don't know if it is still true. Gonna have to do some fact checking.
It can't be true because everyone leaves Cleveland. It was probably true for like 15 minutes.
Yep.
But no. So hopefully you enjoyed this episode. This is a little bit more freeform and a little bit longer than what we've done in the past. Hopefully everything works. And we don't have to do this again.
I mean, we will do this again, but not this episode.
Yeah, not episode 1/2. So we said in our heads that the first episode was episode 0.
Yes.
I think it's actually episode 1.
Hmm. So I don't know. I don't know.
Are you... Okay, all right.
Yeah, no, we should talk about this. Off the podcast. Because I have thoughts. I don't know if
I've never had a thought before, and I never will again. So
perfect.
All right, we're gonna go drink a bunch of beers. So thanks for hanging out. It is a holiday weekend for us. You will probably get this on Monday, the holiday. Chris is gonna edit this one. So every time I sound stupid, blame Chris. I learned Audacity. He's going to learn GarageBand, or he knows GarageBand. I don't know. We're going to figure it out.
Yeah, and no, I'm making quote marks.
Yeah. So enjoy. Take care. This has been Cultural Fugazi.
Thanks for listening.